On March 14, 1814, General Andrew Jackson began to compose a letter. He did it at his headquarters, an open-sided tent or marquee at a camp called Fort Strother in what is now Alabama. The letter was addressed to a man in the same camp. Jackson could have easily summoned the man for a talk, but wanted his message to be written for posterity. This letter omitted the flourishes of courtesy that were common in his writing and characteristic of the age. Even when he sent a note filled with vituperation, Jackson might sign off humbly as, "Respectfully, your most obedient servant." He began letters to his close friend and military subordinate, John Coffey, by addressing him as "Sir," and signed his first and last name when writing home to his wife, Rachel. But his note on March 14 wasted no ink on a show of respect. He did not call the recipient private, which was his rank in the Tennessee militia, nor even check the spelling of his name, which other documents recorded as John Wood. John Woods, you have been tried by a court-martial on the charges of disobedience of orders, disrespect to your commanding officer, and mutiny, and have been found guilty of all of them. Andrew Jackson was supreme commander at this camp, and Wood was at that moment the very lowest of his lowly soldiers. The court which found you guilty of these charges has sentenced you to death by shooting. A firing squad from the 39th Regiment was awaiting the order to carry out the sentence. Any soldier who glimpsed Jackson working with his aides that morning might have seen the general's gold epaulets with gold fringe covering the shoulders of his blue shirt. His cold, steady eyes were set beneath bushy eyebrows in a narrow face. His gray hair was so unruly it could have been a fur hat. He was 6'2", 145 pounds, so thin that according to an old story, his gaunt frame once saved his life in a duel when his antagonist misjudged the narrow target inside Jackson's bulky overcoat, a stick man in uniform. He surely wasn't any thicker after the events of the past 5 months. In the fall, he'd ridden with his army from their homes in Tennessee, fording rivers and bypassing mountains to establish Fort Strother in the woods. Jackson made that punishing journey with his left arm in a sling, having been shot in a gunfight in a hotel in the center of Nashville. The lead ball was still in his body. Since the southward march, supplies had arrived so rarely that his army had little food. One soldier recalled later that they lived on anything we could get, from meat and bread down to acorns, nuts, herbs, and some dry cowhide. Jackson gave his soldiers his own food, which he could hardly eat. His stomach gave him constant trouble. He did contortions to ease the pain, sometimes draping his body over a sapling that had been knocked sideways for the purpose. He was using Fort Strother as his base of operations against a rebellious faction of the Creek Nation, the largest and most important Indian confederation in the region. The Creek rebels had risen up against their own nation's leaders, as well as against the United States, fighting on the same side as the British in the War of 1812. Fort Strother was near the northeast corner of a vast region known as the Mississippi Territory, present-day Mississippi and Alabama, lumped together into one, though this territory was mostly a notion. Some of its borders had not even been surveyed. In reality, Fort Strother was on the Indian map, facing tens of thousands of square miles of Creek territory, where virgin forest reached toward the sky and wet leaves carpeted the hillsides. The main signs of civilization near Fort Strother were Creek towns and plantations, and many of those were lifeless piles of ashes, since Jackson's troops had been ranging out to burn them. At the fort, most of the men lived in tents, arranged beside parade grounds, like the one where General Jackson's letter would soon be read aloud to John Wood. "The offenses of which you have been found guilty are such as cannot be permitted to pass unpunished in an army, but at the hazard of its ruin." He went on writing for several pages. This was the second time that Wood had committed mutiny, Jackson claimed. The private violated all the principles of honor, had a mind totally dead to every honorable sentiment, and was perversely and obstinately bent on spreading discord. Wood's actions betrayed an incorrigible disposition of heart, a rebellious and obstinate temper of mind, which, as it cannot be rectified, ought not to be permitted to diffuse its influence amongst others. An army cannot exist where order and subordination are wholly disregarded.